कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वाला भागिरी वरधारी
Hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, verse number 30. Patim prayantam subalasya putri.
Patim prayantam subalasya putri.
Pati rata chanu jagama sadhvi. Himalayam yasta danda praharsham. Mana savina miva sat sam prahara. Patim prayantam subalasya putri.
Patim prayantam subalasya putri.
Pati rata chanu jagama sadhvi.
Pati rata chanu jagama sadhvi.
Himalayam yasta danda praharsham.
Himalayam yasta danda praharsham.
Savinami vasat samprahara. Patin, her husband, Prayantam, while leaving home, Subalasya of King Subala, Putri, the worthy daughter, Pati Rata, devoted to her husband, Cha, also, Anujagama, followed, Sadvi, the chaste, Himalayam, towards the Himalaya mountains, Nyesta Danda, one who has accepted the rod of the renounced order, Praharsham, object of delight, Manasvinam of the great fighters, Iva, like, Sat, legitimate, Sampraharaha, good lashing. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The gentle and chaste Gandhari, who was the daughter of King Subala or of Gandhar or Gandhara, followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalaya mountains, which are the delight of those who have accepted the staff of the renounced order, like fighters who have accepted a good lashing from the enemy. Purport. Sabalini, or Gandhari, daughter of King Subala and wife of King Dhritarashtra, was ideal as a wife devoted to her husband. The Vedic civilization especially prepares chaste and devoted wives, of whom Gandhari is one amongst many mentioned in history. Lakshmi Ji Sita Devi was also a daughter of a great king, but she followed her husband, Lord Ramachandra, into the forest. Similarly, as a woman, Gandhari could have remained at home or at her father's house, but as a chaste and gentle lady, she followed her husband without consideration. Instructions for the renounced order of life were imparted to Dhritarashtra by Vidura, and Gandhari was by the side of her husband. But he did not ask her to follow him, because he was at that time fully determined, like a great warrior who faces all kinds of dangers in the battlefield. He was no longer attracted to the so-called wife or relative, and he decided to start alone. But as a chaste lady, Gandhari decided to follow her husband till the last moment. Maharaj Dhritarashtra accepted the order of Vanaprastha, and at this stage, the wife is allowed to remain as a voluntary servitor, but in the sannyas stage, no wife can stay with her former husband. A sannyasi is considered to be a dead man civilly, and therefore the wife becomes a civil widow without connection with her former husband. Maharaj Dhritarashtra did not deny his faithful wife, and she followed her husband at her own risk. The sannyasis accept a rod as the sign of the renounced order of life. There are two types of sannyasis. Those who follow the Mayavadi philosophy, headed by Sripad Sankaracharya, accept only one rod, Ekadanda. But those who follow the Vaishnavite philosophy accept three combined rods, three danda. The Mayavadi sannyasis are Ekadandi swamis, whereas the Vaishnava sannyasis are known as three dandi swamis, or more distinctly, three dandi goswamis, in order to be distinguished from the Mayavadi philosophers. The Ekadandi swamis are mostly fond of the Himalayas, but the Vaishnava sannyasis are fond of Vrindavan and Puri. The Vaishnava sannyasis are Narottams, whereas the Mayavadi sannyasis are Dhiras. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was advised to follow the Dhiras because at that stage it was difficult for him to become a Narottam. So when I saw my assigned verse here, I was thinking, because even, although last week I gave class because I was just covering for Seshakubu, but my assigned class for last one that I had was also about Gandhari and the story about her chastity, you know. And again today I get a verse on that, so I thought, oh, maybe Shri Gaurangi is telling me, you know, I should become a little more chaste or something. You know, somebody is telling me here. And I was thinking, I know one thing I learned about what it is not to be, what chaste does not mean. And I had just gotten married, and maybe it was just a couple weeks, I think not more than that. And Seshaprabhu was talking to me about something, and I had a different opinion. And he could see I was hesitant to express my different opinion. So he said to me, being chaste does not mean that you can't have your own opinion. Wow, that was great. I took it to heart. but that is a very important thing he did say, And I've thought about what he has said. And that's what came to my mind as I was reading this. Also, I was thinking that last time when I gave class, I really glorified Kunti. I made a comparison between Kunti Devi and Gandhari and expressing how the real highest position of Kunti Devi. And so I was thinking maybe this time Krishna is giving me another chance to glorify Mother Gandhari. And I think I really appreciated having this class because it made me think about her. There's no comparison, there's just Gandhari and Gandhari. So Gandhari, she is known as, Prabhupada is writing here as ideal, as a wife devoted to her husband. Gandhari, she certainly had her own opinion, talking about having what chastity does not mean, doesn't mean that a wife cannot have her own opinion. If the husband expects the wife to have his own opinion, and not to have an own opinion, that means he's a little insecure, and he needs his wife to make him feel secure. But that's not something a chaste wife, in definition, it means. And Gandhari certainly had her own opinion in regards to how Dhritarashtra saw how he wanted his son to be the king. Now, not that Gandhari didn't want to her sons to be the king. She certainly wanted. We heard last time that how when she heard that Kunti had Yudhishthira, she hit herself, her womb. So she really wanted her son to be the king, but I don't think that Dhritarashtra had her into what he was planning to do along with Duryodhan. And that's because Gandhari would have not agreed with that kind of ways of getting the kingdom is by some foul means or by killing the Pandavas. So she certainly had her own opinion about how things would be done. And she's known as a chaste wife. I thought about Lady Macbeth, and the reason I actually thought, because I had given a while ago a class in Hanumat Prashak Maharaj, and I was talking about Dhritarashtra, and Hanumat Prashak Maharaj he brought up Macbeth. He was talking about Macbeth and how he was. And so I guess in my mind, I thought about Lady Macbeth when I was thinking. And certainly, I mean, if you think, Macbeth wanted the kingdom just like Dhritarashtra. He had the desire. He really had a desire to have the kingdom because he was told that the witches had foretold that he was going to be the king. And so he expressed that desire to his wife, to Lady Macbeth. And she, as a good wife, I mean, she went for it. She kind of went beyond what he was thinking to do. So you could see that, you could kind of say that she was really good. I mean, she saw her husband expressed her his desires, and she went a few extra steps. She sorted out the plan and everything, what to do so that his desires could be fulfilled. Again, this is a very simplistic way I'm expressing that, but kind of to make the point. Now, would you say Lady Macbeth was a chaste wife to Macbeth? Somebody's saying yes. Anybody else would say that she was a chaste wife? Would you use that word chaste for Lady Macbeth? Nobody has any opinion? Maybe you have to think about it. Kind of, yeah. When I thought about that, I thought, somehow the word, you have an opinion, please. Oh, I didn't see your hand, Siddhi.
If she wasn't she was loyal, perhaps, in her own head, But if she's not, if she doesn't actually have her husband's best interest in mind, how's that actually chased in that sense?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for that good point. Yes, she was loyal. Definitely loyal. She was definitely, it's funny, that's interesting, the word that you use, loyal. And that same word came to my mind, Stididi. You know, we're related, so same word came to my mind, was loyal. She was loyal, but I didn't think that she was chaste. And so I looked in the dictionary about what is loyal and what is chaste. And loyal basically says faithful to a cause, ideal, custom, institution, like that, loyalty, or loyal friend. Faithful in allegiance to one's lawful sovereign or government. So basically, loyal means, you know, faithful to a cause. Whereas chaste, besides the usual meaning of chaste, you know, celibacy, the word chaste, Webster Dictionary says, pure in thought and act. Modest was sincerely trying to be chaste. That's an example it gives. Clean, spotless. So this is the words that are described for what it is to be chaste. So yes, Lady Macbeth was loyal, but Gandhari, who had a different opinion in the way how he was executing his desire, Gandhari did not necessarily agree with that, but she is considered as a chaste wife. So it's important to understand what chastity means. Now, Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport that the Vedic civilization prepares chaste and devoted wives. How is that so? How is that Vedic civilization prepares? Indirectly saying that the modern civilization doesn't, but the Vedic civilization does. So we know in our own Gaudiya tradition, the guru and disciple relationship is very much an important part, very crucial, guru and disciple relationship. And so we hear so much, we are trained so much as we come into spiritual life, we are trained about the importance of guru, the importance of a disciple, how a disciple should act. So in Vedic civilization, the husband is considered as the guru. There's a saying in Ramayana, it says, Strinam Bharata hi Daivatam, meaning that for a woman, the husband is the god or the guru. So the importance of choosing a husband was something very much, very much carefully done. Not that you just choose somebody, you know, you grow older and you grow a certain age and then you choose somebody. No, it was a very important thing because the husband is a guru. And so a suitable husband would be chosen. But not just husband. You know, sometimes certain things we hear about, you know, the husband being a guru and that being kind of, laughed at or whatever, because the civilization certainly is different now. But in Vedic civilization, any dependent was considered to be a disciple or one to take shelter of their elders. We see that Rishabhdev says in the fifth canto, Guru nasyat, Guru nasasyat, Svajano nasasyat, Pita nasasyat, Janani nasasyat, Daivam natatsyan, Napatis chanasyan, Namo chayedya samupeta mirtyum. And Srila Prabhupada says, one who cannot deliver his dependents from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod. So, what do you have to say about that? He says in the same purport, All these responsibilities cannot be discharged honestly unless one can save the dependent from the repeated birth and death. So the husband was expected to be the guru of his wife. We look at, so we can look at Gandhari's guru. Was he qualified? Was he a qualified guru? No. He was not a qualified guru. He is meant to be her protector, her guide. But because of his weak mind, he definitely had a weak mind. He had desires. Everybody has material desires, but he had his weak mind, and so he wasn't able to control his sons. And what does Gandhari get from her guru, from her husband? She gets that all her sons get killed. That's kind of sad. Her guru, he, because of his own personal desires, he allows her wives, her disciples, her sons to be killed. That's pretty sad. So what kind of guru is Dhritarashtra? Again, I felt like Krishna was giving me a chance to appreciate Gandhari. It gave me a second chance. So if you really think about Gandhari, she was in that situation. However, we see that Gandhari doesn't reject her husband, her guru. She was devoted to him. She was still devoted to him. Sesha Prabhu and I are attending some course on organized by Shanaka Rishi Prabhu by the Oxford Center of Studies, Hindu Studies. And so there one devotee scholar, his name is Gopinath Acharya. So Gopinath Acharya Prabhu had written a paper on Narahari Sarkar. And Narahari Sarkar talks about gurus, about the position of guru in Gaudiya Sampradaya. And he, Narahari, as you know, he's a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya. You know, we sing in the Gaura Arti. What's that? Narahari Adi Kori Chamara Dhulaya. So there Narahari is a contemporary. He was actually 3 years older than Lord Chaitanya. So Narahari, he stresses that, I was kind of pretty shocking, he stresses that the guru should be honored even if he has no virtues. And he says, however, the guru is not beyond reproach. I'm just repeating some part. You know, the whole article is really good, but just repeating what is for this class. He says, however, the guru is not beyond reproach. Narahari continues, if the guru does something unbecoming, then one should reprimand him in private with doctrines, that is Siddhanta, established by reasoning. But one should not renounce him. So we're talking about Vedic civilization, and we just heard that how Gandhari did not renounce. But here we're seeing more close in our Gaudiya tradition. This is what Narahari is saying. He also says, whatever transgressions there might be, in other words, sometimes there may be some transgressions that the guru might fall into. So whatever transgressions there might be, they do not disqualify a Vaishnava from being a guru and are therefore ultimately to be overlooked. The disciple, so this is not completely, we're talking about saying the word Vedic in the sense much prior to that, We're talking about our Gaudiya civilization here. So the disciple should remain loyal to the guru and help him in private to get back on the right path by essentially offering back to the guru what he has taught the disciple in the past. There's one verse Prabhupada from Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto in regards to Devahuti and Kardamuni. And Srila Prabhupada uses two words there describing between a relationship of a wife towards the husband or a disciple towards the guru or one towards a bhakta towards God. So he uses two words, Vishambhena and Gauravena. So Gauravena means with respect, and Vishambhena means with intimacy, like a friend. So two words are used, Gauravena and Vishambhena. Certainly initially the relationship between a guru and a disciple, which may be in any form, whether a wife and a husband, or a child and a parent, or any other dependent, and one who's giving shelter. Initially they might be Gauravena, a lot of respect. But there has to come to a point of Vishrambena, intimacy. When that kind of intimacy is there between a disciple and spiritual master in any kind of form, as I'm repeating, there has to be intimacy. It's only when that intimacy is there, and not familiarity, but intimacy, is that one, a disciple would be able to offer back to the guru what he has taught the disciple in the past. To really care for one's guru. But Narahari does say, and actually Jiva Goswami also says, I'll tell you what Jiva Goswami says, that the disciple can reject the guru if he has become hostile to the Vaishnavas. Vaishnavi Dveshi. If he has become hostile, not that he has some problem, some fall down like we talk about in ISKCON, no. If he has actually become hostile. Narahari says that Narahari is very much into, like I read, not to ever renounce, and even if there's not, he had no virtue, still to be honored. But he does say that a time that one may reject, and this is what he said, if he is averse to Krishna's fame, does not accept his pastimes and play, or if he himself is obnoxiously arrogant and applauded by the common people, imitates Krishna, then he certainly should be rejected. So, Prabhupada says Vedic civilization prepares people prepares chaste and devoted wives. Vedic civilization prepares people of character and integrity. Again, the relationship of guru and disciple is there between in many relationships. We see that in the relationship of Yudhishthira Maharaj and his younger brothers. His younger brothers acted like a proper disciple of accepting Yudhishthira Maharaj no matter what he did, almost to a fault, but you can see why. We see the Pandavas are accepting their mother Kunti and her instruction of marrying, all the brothers sharing the booty that they got, and that is Mother Draupadi. And so Vedic civilization prepares people with integrity. Working through problems, when we have problems, if we work through problems, it helps us to build our character rather than discard something or denounce something. It's something, we live in a very disposable society. Modern culture, modern civilization, very subtly, it's a very subtle a culture, civilization, everything goes very subtly. So the modern civilization subtly works on us with the mentality to get rid of things when they don't work, rather than fixing them, rather than fixing relationships, fixing things, and whatever kind of relationship we may have. So, again, glorifying Mother Gandhari and seeing her position, it's kind of like her situation is, one sense, so sad, although in the end it works out, but even in the end it's so sad, because all her life she is serving her guru, her husband, Dhritarashtra, and he is who he is. And at the end of the life, when he gets his brains back, at that stage he just renounces everything and says he doesn't even care for her. And says, okay, I'm going. Whatever you want to do with your life. So when he understands that this is what he's meant to do, at that stage he's indifferent to her. But Gandhari is still the same chaste, gentle, devoted wife. So we could pray, I think, to Gandhari to give us the simplicity, the gentleness, the forbearance that she had to be in that relationship with her husband, who is her guru, and how she continued to serve him. So in conclusion, I was thinking too that we could all meditate on something, meditate on what it means to be chaste, to Srila Prabhupada's teachings, even when they're not palatable. What does it mean to be chaste to his movement, even if it has its faults? What does it mean to be chaste to our Diksha Guru, even if he's not the topmost? What it means to be chaste to our Siksha Gurus, even if their instructions may not resonate with us? And what it means to be chaste to our spouses, despite them being who they are? So something we can meditate on. Thank you very much for your kind attention. If you have any questions or comments, please share.
Thank you, Mama T. I was just thinking about Gandhari, though, how... I mean, she didn't believe that he was doing the right thing, right, Dhritarashtra? But yet, because she's his wife, she's kind of supporting him, which is, for me, would be difficult. You know what I mean? Because it seems as chastity to a higher principle of doing what's right. Mm-hmm. And then there's chastity to the husband, her husband, you know, even though he's doing something that's wrong. So it seems in that situation it'd be really hard to figure out, like, what's the right thing to do, because Krishna didn't want the war, you know, and yet he was pretty much insisting that. What, you know, Duryodhan was insisting on it. So sometimes there's a very, you know, like a real conflict, a moral conflict, and what's the right thing to do here?
Yeah, it's certainly, there's a lot of conflict. If you see in the Mahabharata, mm-hmm. there's a lot of conflict. Like you pointed out, that conflict, and I mentioned about Yudhishthira Maharaj and Draupadi being disrobed, and the brothers not saying anything.
I'm asking, would it have been a... I would have thought the higher thing to do was to just I mean, she expressed her opinion to Dhritarashtra, but he didn't change.
Yeah, and so what do you do? What would you suggest for her to do? And I guess that's what my point is. What would you?
I mean, I guess I would talk to the children.
You think Gandhari didn't do?
I didn't hear about it doing.
Well, from I definitely think she did that.
Yeah, yeah.
I definitely think, at least according to the series.
But then because she loved her children too, it's like she, you know, tried to give Duryodhan the armor and all of that. And that also seems like a natural thing for a mother, almost no matter what, she tries to protect her
children.
Her children.
Yeah. Yeah, so she, he is a person, Gandhari, she has a lot of different roles, yeah?
Yeah.
She's a wife, she's a mother, the two main roles, yeah? And she's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
She herself, she's a person, she's a human. She has her desires. She definitely wants to see her sons to be, she wants her son, she wants Duryodhan to be the next king. But she doesn't want to do it the way Dhritarashtra wants.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Gandhari did the right thing.
Okay, so I have a kind of comparison here with the last meditation we're talking about. So, you know, sometimes, okay, somebody has a spiritual master, and, you know, they're dedicated, but maybe there's a problem and it's not really going with ISKCON, you know what I mean? Totally with what Prabhupada wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So then how does somebody decide what to do, like in that situation? They want to be loyal to their guru, but we've seen how that can be a problem. It seems like the highest principle would be to loyal to ISKCON.
Yes, the question is, yes, the highest principle could be loyal to ISKCON, and yes, the highest principle could be loyal to one spiritual master,
mm-hmm.
as long as the spiritual master is giving them what Srila Prabhupada is giving.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's conflicts there.
And if it seems that he's not, then what should the disciples do? Take shelter of some older devotees and get their opinion?
It's very hard. If you think about, I don't think so. It's so clear, black and white. And in my mind, I always think they could be the aspect of the heart, that where your heart is. So even sometimes you may be doing different things. If you just think about Bhishma Dev, where was his heart? His heart was with the Pandavas. But did he fight against the Pandavas? He did fight against the Pandavas, yes? But where was his heart? So he did protect the throne. He did protect the throne. And that was his duty, to protect the throne. And he was there to protect the throne. And his duty, or I would say more his heart, was towards the Pandavas. And so can you say Bhishma Dev acted against Krishna? No, not really. Krishna loved him, and he loved Krishna, and he loved the Pandavas, and yet he did something different. So just talking about that example, that even if the disciple may go to follow his guru, and his heart may be towards his guru, and that's the hope that the guru is giving him the right teachings that he has received from his guru, and maybe he may not be able to give him, or he's not giving him to take shelter directly of ISKCON, but maybe the disciple can think that he's dedicated to ISKCON in his heart, and yet do what he's doing is to follow his guru, or the other way around too, that he may be serving in ISKCON and doing that, and still in his heart he is dedicated to his guru. So I mean, ultimately, I guess, is the heart, and Krishna knows the heart, and sometimes externally things may be,
And you mentioned somewhere in the
You mentioned somewhere
here that the mic?
That the disciple could perhaps talk to the guru and help him back.
Yes, yes.
That was really nice.
Yes.
That idea.
Yes.
There's still that bond is so strong, and try to, instead of just leaving,
yes.
Try to fix it, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's the word I thought about is Rishambhena, where there should be a friendship, intimacy, intimate relationship, just like between husband and wife. There's an intimate relationship. I mean, you actually see Srila Prabhupada's discussions with his disciples, his older disciples. I specifically think about Tamal Krishna Maharaj, very intimate relationship where he would discuss things, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very easily expressing what he thought, and you know, a relationship where there was a very intimate relationship, and yet at the same time, Gauravena, respectful to his spiritual master. So both those qualities, yes. Yes, Didi Muni Prabhu.
From our radio audience here, we have someone named Nanda Glick, and she says...
Oh, I wonder who that Nanda Glick is.
I'm just reading it. Mm-hmm. In the modern, quote, Western civilization, even the concept of chastity is unknown. I can remember once, many years ago, when one of the devotees was speaking about how the women should be chaste, and the person replied, quote, chaste by whom, quote.
Thank you, Nanda. That was a good laugh.
Then we have a Hare Krishna from a Jai Shri Krishna. And here, Madhurya Leela Al.
Okay. Yes.
This is our audience.
Yes.
We should have a phone where you can call in, like, you know. But, how do we understand Srila Prabhupada's instruction for women in the past to leave their husbands if he was not following principles of spiritual life?
Maybe you can respond, Srila Manipura.
How do we understand Srila Prabhupada's instruction for women? Well, that's in the past.
And it'd be interesting to see what was the situation and whatever, whatever. You know?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
Because
different
times. And also... Prabhupada said separation, but not divorce, you know. Yeah, but anyway, but yeah.
That was good. Then I had I'm a defender of Gandhari here. I somehow, this is my thing. But, you know, we say she's gentle. Well, he's a problem, I think, in Western, you know, in contemporary.
Could you put the mic?
Contemporary civilization, we think, you know, I looked it up in the dictionary. Chaste, basically, the definition is focusing on not being adulterous.
That's just the first couple definitions, but it did say about being pure and simple and...
Yeah, but I mean, so that's kind of the... You just talk in everyday language.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is when you think of gender relations within a... You know, it's often considered within a context of, you know, some clueless person being subservient to someone who's basically also clueless. You know. So, you know... So it's a little problematic. But one thing is, Gandhari, you know, we think of her like, oh, she's gentle and she was just subservient. But she had the capacity to destroy Bhima at one point.
Yeah.
And Krishna had to protect Bhima. So it wasn't like, you know, she had no extra cards in the deck there. I mean, she was proactively playing this card here because she wanted to, not because she had to.
Yeah, people sometimes misunderstand the word gentle and chaste and submissive. I mean, I was actually going to bring, but I didn't bring. There's a whole thing in Ramayana how Sita Devi is talking to Ram. Pretty amazing. Yeah, it doesn't mean like this or doormat or at least if that's the thing. I'm definitely not a chaste woman. I express my opinions. Yeah.
Sure. So one thing in the purport I noticed that it described that impersonalist sannyasis, mm-hmm. They become dhira, which means undisturbed. Mm-hmm. That's their goal. And the Vaishnava sannyasis, they are narottama, which means the highest person, like the highest human being. So it's a different mindset. Now, the idea of being undisturbed can be seen in a very impersonal way. But the Narottama, he has to react and be in any situation where there is disturbance or no disturbance. So that's also in the prayers to the Goswami, of the Goswamis, Dhir Adhira Janapriyo, that they're admired, loved by everyone, even the Adhira people. Mm-hmm. So I just thought it was a very interesting point to be made. The other point about...
Actually, when Prabhupada says here that Dhritarashtra, for him, it was difficult for him to become a Narottama.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have the qualification.
Yeah.
And he didn't have that. The devotion, he did not have bhakti, was his... one of his great flaws. And the other point, that it seems that the Mahabharata is the understanding is that the Mahabharata is a text that describes dharma, that describes what is the proper dharma in any given situation. What was the proper dharma for the Pandavas while Yudhishthira was losing everything in the dice game? What was their dharma to do? And what was the dharma of Bhishma and the elders who allowed the disrobing of Draupadi? Because they could have stopped it. And Dhritarashtra also, of course, was the central character at that sabha. So this is it's just some ideas, but the difference between Dhira and Narottama is a very crucial one for us in understanding Vaishnava philosophy.
Thank you very much for that point. I guess that's why the Bhagavad Gita says to Arjuna, Krishna says to Arjuna that give up all these dharmas because they're on a lower level. Yes, that they're on a lower level. And yet, we hear what Prabhupada is saying in the purport about what it means, you know, how we can cultivate certain, I guess, qualities and, So, yeah, thank you very much for that point, Vandit Prabhu. Yes, last.
I was thinking, for me or for us to learn, is the Gandhari's way or Draupadi's way? As a Vaishnava, follower of Prabhupada. There are a lot of similarity between these two Matajis. Draupadi also lost all her children by Aswatthama, but yet she, of course, displayed extreme compassion to the murderer of her all children. That she felt the pain of murderer's mother, and she forgave. But Gandhari took that pain and reacted and cursed Krishna.
Let's not criticize at this stage Gandhari. I did that.
I'm not criticizing.
No,
I'm stating
the fact.
I did
that last. In my last class, I had praised Kunti Devi on the devotional platform and how she was greater than Gandhari. But this class, I just wanted to limit to just expressing Gandhari, that she was a great woman. And so I don't want to go there because I did that last time. So, yeah, we can have a whole philosophy and tell about Gandhari, but this class was about focusing on her chastity and specifically about guru and disciple relationship. So,
okay, how so, about guru and disciple?
But class is over now at this stage. Thank you very much. Stop here.